ready to dive in? Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast. Every episode explores, expands, and evolves the truths we encounter and experience in our human quest for clarity, joy, and exponential growth. And now, here is your host, Jim Case. Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Adventures in Truth livecast. My name is Jim Case. Welcome to the show. We have a great show for you today. I am really excited to have back to the show Paul Diamond, Shaman Ayahuasquero from Peru. He's coming to us live from Peru. If you'd like to interact with the show, head over to Adventures in Truth livecast Facebook page. And you can actually ask questions or leave comments through the live feed. But you can also catch us on any of our other Facebook pages and also through E360 TV. You can check us through the app or Apple TV, Roku, or Amazon Fire. So check us out on those locations. But come over to Adventures in Truth Facebook page if you'd like to interact with the show. So today we're going to talk about ayahuasca and building the relationship with ayahuasca and the genesis of this show and really what stimulated is I'm a part of a couple of groups. To be transparent, I have experienced ayahuasca three times. Actually, Paul was the shaman for me, took me through a very powerful series of ceremonies that actually stimulated a kundalini awakening in the process. So I'm a member of different groups, and as this pandemic has gone on and as the situation with the world continues, I have found myself a little flummoxed because the approach that I had to the medicine when I was first exposed to it took quite a bit of time before I actually came to the point of engaging the medicine. So I hear a lot of things about combining things and should I do this and can I do that and can I get ayahuasca here and can I get it there? And all are good questions. But I thought to myself, heck, I have this great platform and I love talking about this. And I know someone who's deeply in that whole experience and has a lot of very powerful and very clear and great information that can help all of us in this process. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. We're going to bring Paul in just a minute here. Before we get started, of course, as you can see from my backdrop, I'm still celebrating the release of my book and will continue to celebrate it because it's an amazing piece of work and something that I'm very proud of and something that I think truly will change your life. And I say that because anything that can assist you to change your relationship with fear will radically change your life. And I wanted to take a moment here and just do a quick excerpt from the book to kind of give you a feel of what we're focused on. So this chapter, Getting to Know Your Emotional Guidance System, really is about understanding fear as an emotion, but beyond that, how we engage with it and how we utilize it. So how often have you been confronted by some task or opportunity that when you think about it, causes your energy to drop or spin, as I like to call it, meaning you begin a downward spiral of emotional and mental chatter. The more you push into it, the worse it feels. So many of us have received the message from various self-help books to just push through our resistance and make it happen. And so it's no surprise you automatically assume that your inability or unwillingness to complete whatever it is you think you need to complete is because you are either being lazy, afraid, incompetent, or whatever language you typically choose. But regardless of the words, the result is the same. Your energy doesn't feel good, but you persist anyway. What I know with certainty is that when you do this, your results will not be what you anticipated or wanted. Even if you are successful by pushing through, you will find that you are battered by interference after interference, delays, miscommunications, misunderstandings, and the list goes on. You may succeed in completing the task, but the likelihood is that you will not be happy with the results, and perhaps worse, will find yourself extremely frustrated by the process. In this situation, what you will recount is not the accomplishment, but instead a rehashing of the drama and frustration you experienced attempting to complete the task. When you are negatively focused this way, you will only feel a mild sense of accomplishment, if any, because of how awful the process was. What is shocking and disconcerting is that we actually think that this is normal, that this is the way life is supposed to be. But when you understand that your emotions, all of them, are your guidance system, you not only start to pay attention to how you feel, but you realize that your emotions are an incredibly powerful tool. And that's from chapter 11 of the book. And again, laying more foundation for this understanding that changing your relationship with fear is a powerful tool. And I encourage you, go on over to www.adventuresintruth.com and check out the book. You can check out more about the show and check out some of the shows that I've been on. So thank you very much for checking it out. And then lastly, I would ask, if you're enjoying the show, please hit the little bell on YouTube or hit the like or subscribe button on Facebook and help us get the message out there further. Help us expand this great program to really reach out to people, to assist them to finding steps and ways that they can actually step into their own transformation and their own changing of their own vibration. So, and on that note, thank you again for being here. And we're going to bring Paul in here in just a second. Y'all have met Paul before. He is an ayahuasquero and shaman. He was living in Pisac, Peru. He has an amazing center called Tantraya. And he has all kinds of stuff that he does there. And he's going to get to talk to you about that in just a little bit. We're going to bring Paul in now and say hi all the way from Peru. Hey, Paul.
Hello, welcome, Jim. Hello, audience.
Welcome aboard. Great to see you again. Thank you. I appreciate you. Really appreciate you taking the time and coming in to hang out with me and talk about this stuff. I hope you were listening a little to the intro there, where what really prompted this particular topic as opposed to another topic seems to be this escalation of interest in diving into plant medicine and getting into the process. And so as I'm reading these questions, I'm kind of blown away, more not so much that the questions are being asked, but that there's not really a lot of good answers, at least to me. Mm-hmm. It's a struggle. It's, you know, mm-hmm. as I read through and I go, oh my gosh, this poor person is giving a lot of information, but is it useful information? And so it started stimulating me thinking about, God, well, what happens when you do ayahuasca in Oklahoma? When ayahuasca has no relativity to that place in the world, it doesn't grow there. It's not there. So I want, you know, I'm just sort of laying the foundation for these things that I'd like to talk through, not because I think anybody's doing anything wrong. I just want to make sure that we're getting out as much useful, supportive information so people can make really good decisions and not mental decisions, but connected decisions about interacting with medicine and all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah. Of course, in recent years, we've seen an absolute explosion of interest in the medicine, precipitated perhaps by kind of, you know, Strassman's DMT experiments and of course this extraordinary process of decriminalization that's happening across one of the most rigid societies on earth, your own. This is a really extraordinary phenomenon, and you know, with that decriminalization comes both the positive aspects of the freedom of cognitive liberty, which should not be decried. That is an absolutely awesome thing and an extraordinary thing. But then, of course, the darker side of that is indiscriminate use and dangerous usage and, you know, that kind of negative side to legalization or decriminalization. So, yeah, I mean, the fact is, you know, we've got to understand from the get-go, we're dealing with extraordinarily powerful medicines that can open up a person to extremely powerful forces. And that has to be taken into consideration. Not everybody gets there from the get-go by any means. You know, you might have a light experience with your medicine that you brew up in your bedroom, or you might have no experience, which is probably for the best. But at some point, if you continue down the path of working with entheogenic tools, psychedelic medicines and medicine plants, you're going to come across areas that you're most likely not going to be able to handle or have no training in. And it's at this point that we understand the necessity of the teacher, the sage, the mage, the master, the shaman, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. So we have to be very, very discriminate when it comes to these things and understand that they are extremely powerful tools, not to be underestimated and not to be used glibly or applied liberally, but applied with great discrimination and, you know, with good research and, perceptive heart, let's say.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And a great introduction. We're going to take a short break here because I'm going to go into the kind of that focus time that I like to do here for just a few minutes to kind of get everybody on the same page with us. And when we come back, I want to kind of get into the, if you don't mind, I want to kind of get into the minutiae a little from the perspective, you know, again, reflecting on my own process. And I know everybody's process is unique, but I want to talk a little bit about the idea of being called. What is that experience? And is it a requirement? Is it even necessary? Because I think a lot of people are saying, oh, this sounds like the new great thing, as opposed to feeling that pull to that. You know, in my experience, I never did things like LSD. I never had any experiences prior to the ayahuasca experiences I had in Peru. So I have a different take on it. But, you know, I don't think, again, I'm curious just to kind of understand more deeply and to help others understand more deeply how to connect to the medicine. So we're going to do that. On the flip side, we'll be back in just a few. Paul, I'll put you on the spot and you can say no. If you'd like to carry our meditation today, I would love for you to. And if not, I will carry on because I know I'm putting you on the spot. So,
you know, I don't mind. Yeah, sure. How long for?
For what, about 5 minutes?
About 5 minutes. Okay. Yeah. All right then. Okay, so if you'd like to take a comfortable position, everybody, making sure you're sitting with them, letting the eyes gently close. Just beginning to tune into the breath, becoming aware of the inhalation and the exhalation. Just become aware of the porous nature of your being, that you're drawing in energy, air, oxygen, particles, bits of stardust in with the in-breath, breathing in fact, the entire universe. With every breath. And then as we exhale, releasing all of the unwanted, stagnant, sticky, hard, uncomfortable energies, just giving them back to the universe to be recycled. The universe has this quality of recycling. We see it in every moment, cellular decomposition and regeneration, a simple inhale and exhale, the living forces and the dead, the returning to the earth as dust, a skeletal powder, and then the rebirth as various energies, be they human or animal, mineral or vegetable. This constant process of cycling and recycling that the universe goes through in every moment, just recognizing ourselves as part of that cycle of infinity, breathing in light, breathing out the dark, and breathing in the dark and breathing out the light. Recognizing ultimately there is no difference between any aspect of interior or exterior being. they are in fact one and the same, objective and subjective, internal and external, merely labels, false dichotomies placed upon the vast veneer of truth, of reality as a whole. Just letting ourselves rest in that unity, that sense of interdependence with all things, to recognize there's no separation between ourself and other, that there is in fact no other to be found but the shining great self, only, everywhere, always, in all states and conditions and dimensions of being, there is found only that one self with capital S. Just resting in this understanding, becoming one with this truth, allowing ourselves to experience that at the heart of our being, the deepest level of our nature.
Thank you for that. That was wonderful. Well, So, welcome back, everybody, as you come out of that lovely space. So my launching point here is, as I was saying before we went into the meditation, I was remembering when I began this journey. It actually started almost a year before I actually signed up to come to Peru. And it was a lengthy process, because I had no idea what I was dealing with. I had no idea what it was about. After some exploration and some misdirection, I found El Camino Sagrado, which is where you were at the time. And the thing about that appealed to me was this idea of being able to integrate this powerfully ancient medicine into today's reality, meaning that we would focus on not only the experience, but that experience then being able to be integrated into our crazy society, as opposed to going back into, you know, I'll be going back to my hut somewhere in the mountains and I won't have to interact with anybody. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, for me, that calling was a curiosity it started with. And then the more I learned, the more I could feel this pull and this desire to connect to this. And even up until, especially, I mean, at the moment that I found you guys and then I actually signed up, that was a whole other escalation process that we can get into. Because I firmly believe when you commit to something, then all the energy opens up to that experience that you're about to engage in. And that was still 3 months away. So I had a lot of time there ahead of time. But let's talk. Can you talk a little about your experience with what is it to be called, or how do you really know the medicine is for you? Is there a distinction there?
Gosh, it's such a tricky one. You know, the truth is we have to be very honest ourselves now and understand that the medicine and medicines even are kind of the zeitgeist. It's kind of everywhere. information is actually rife on the subjects of entheogens and particularly DMT and ayahuasca. I mean, LSD, of course, you know, world famous, but in the modern age, a lot of the focus has been on DMT and ayahuasca. And really, it's kind of everywhere. It's in the media, it's in, you know, on the television, and, you know, friends are talking about it, and it's the next big thing, you know. So it's definitely not easy to ascertain any real call to the medicine, I would say, these days. It's very difficult to determine that. Now, we can say for ourselves, you know, that sounds like it would be a good thing for me, or, you know, I think that this is appropriate for where I am in my life. You know, I've heard good things about it, and I'm willing to try it. Or on the other side of it, you know, kind of last ditch measure, I'm dying of cancer, I've got no other choice, Western medicine has failed me, I may as well go to the jungle and try this crazy medicine. You know, the thing is, it's really, really out there. And unless we're going to be very egoic about it, I think we need to try to move away from this notion that we've been kind of, you know, magically or supernaturally called necessarily by the medicine. You know, we can be more honest with ourselves and simply say, I've heard about it and it sounds like it might be a good thing for me. Mm-hmm. You know, now I'm not suggesting that when we make these decisions that they're not subtly influenced in a number of different ways. I mean, they certainly are. There are supernatural conditions that, you know, give us a hint to move in certain directions. And that may be, you know, watch this particular television show, it's got something interesting in you, and it happens to be about ayahuasca or something. So I'm not, you know, entirely ruling out the idea that there are forces that lead us along our path. I mean, you know, there are, and, you know, some of them are quite powerful. But at the same time, we mustn't fall into a kind of an egoic naivety that we're somehow special now if we've discovered ayahuasca. I'm afraid it doesn't really make us special. It's kind of just about everywhere right now. Yeah. So we can be more mature about our relationship to it. And that improves our relationship to it. Instead of having this idealistic kind of idea, you know, we bring it more down to the ground. And that's a useful thing when it comes to medicines that take you off planet. The more grounded you can be with them, the better, ultimately. Otherwise, you end up just kind of a nut job for the most part, believing all kinds of fantasies. And, you know, the medicine isn't averse to taking you down that road if that's a lesson you need to learn. You know, not everything on the medicine is to be taken literally, especially grandiose, megalomaniacal kind of, you know, savior complex, messianic.
Jesus is talking to me, yeah.
You know, you've
got to be careful with that kind of stuff. So let me throw this. I was thinking about this as well. Maybe the threshold that is useful to present is because of its saturation. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think that the day of the calling may still be there, but it's so mixed into all the media and everything that's already going on about ayahuasca. So here's the thing to me is that ayahuasca is not like choosing to do mushrooms or you know, to smoke weed. There's a difference here in that once you cross that threshold, something is permanently changed. So it's a question of, are you prepared to go through that doorway? Because when you're done, you got to go back to the world you came from. And in doing so, this is where for me, I think where the rubber meets the road is, are you prepared for what you're going to see and then how you're going to be able to deal with that? Because the realities that you encounter when you're in ayahuasca and the reality that you live in your egoic home, they aren't the same worlds by any stretch of the imagination. So what are your thoughts about that?
They're not the same, but they are ultimately, and I think we really need to understand that that is the truth on an ultimate level. You know, they say in the Indian tradition that samsara and nirvana are one in the highest levels of understanding. So actually, there isn't actually a difference, because it's all the nature of consciousness only, whether it be within the medicine, whether it be within the marketplace or your home. Actually, all you're really witnessing is consciousness itself in all of its conditions. So it's true to say that some of them may appear to be more exotic than others, but that's simply because we've become more used to, you know, certain states and conditions of consciousness than other, and have given credence to certain states and conditions of consciousness over others. But, you know, these new or perhaps ancient neurological pathways along which the sort of DMT type structures are running, as opposed to the more modern serotonin kind of pathways, I mean, they indicate something other, but it's still of the nature of consciousness, because there is still a witnessing personage of that. You still feel like you just feel like you going mad or seeing visions or being bored on a Monday at work. The fact is, there's still that kind of observer self in all of it, and it's still being observed through the nature of consciousness. So ultimately no difference. But of course, when you're seeing aliens on a Saturday night, and then you've got to go and kind of work on your office line on a Monday morning, of course, that seems very radically different on a kind of experiential level. And the truth is, they're not always easy to integrate. You know, ayahuasca particularly, it's a very multidimensional and extraterrestrial medicine. And it's not necessarily for this. I mean, I'm being a bit hesitant because I'm not sure I agree entirely with what I'm about to say, but it's not necessarily for this time of humanity's evolution. It's a necessary precursor to that, and we've got to kind of kickstart humanity into that extraterrestrial or multidimensional consciousness. But it isn't necessarily that it needs to be completely embodied in our three-dimensional culture at this particular stage of our evolution. It might just be a precursor to something. You know, there's no doubt it doesn't fit very well with three-dimensional normal reality for the most part, but we still need to learn to expand into those territories, because we're going to open up to them as a whole at some point, for sure.
Yeah, that's powerful. That's there's so many, you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking about my own experiences and experiences that I, you know, that I know my friends have, or other friends have had, or people that I've read about. It's remarkable where you can go. And I guess where I was really trying to say there was just recognizing that you're crossing a threshold that's different from many other things that you would do. Because it opens things that other medicines don't necessarily open, and because that's now triggered or opened or expanded, you get to deal with it whether you want to or not. You get to interact with it whether you want to or not once you cross that threshold. So just that's not a fear thing. I didn't find any of the experiences to be fearful. I found them. I also didn't spend my time in bliss the whole time. So it was a very multi-level, all kind of everywhere type of experience. And I can say honestly, 3 years later, I'm still integrating experiences. Stuff still returns to me in consciousness as I'm in my meditation, as I'm experiencing my life. I just had the experience last Sunday of re-encountering some of the energies that you and I encountered when that whole Kundalini thing woke up. I had my visitor return and brought a few friends this time. But now there's a comfort level with that, with understanding I'm integrating parts of myself, And because I understand that, I embrace the experience and it doesn't freak me out. It doesn't, you know, I'm not like, oh my gosh, what happened? It's, oh, this is how I'm integrating. This is how it's happening. It's coming. I found another part of me because I'm doing the work. I'm doing what I need to do to continue to expand my energy. So it's just understanding that to me, you crossed a threshold, just be prepared. Life's going to change. You know, yeah. You're not going to come out, you know, it's not smoking a joint and waking up the next day going, gosh, that was great. You're crossing a threshold. It's something different. And what makes it amazing. So what are your thoughts on, the thing that I think is so important is what you started this with, which is the proliferation of the understanding of ayahuasca and where it is and what it is. So this next question may be a moot point, but the idea of doing ayahuasca in Oklahoma, is there anything to be aware of in the experience of what you're going to experience potentially in that environment versus the environment where the plant is born, where the plant is, it comes from the earth? Are there things to be aware of as people, because people are going to do that. People are going, you know, and I hear it, I see it all the time. So again, this is not a bad thing or a wrong thing. This is simply, let's be informed about what the experience is going to be and how we can approach it to get the most benefit from it in those circumstances.
Yeah. Okay. Let's just go back one moment and just point out, yes, there's no scientific objectivity or tourism in the ayahuasca world. If it works and you get a good shaman, you'd come out of it different. And your worldview is changed. You cannot go into it believing that you can observe what the ayahuasca experience is, but not remain actually changed or affected by that. It's not possible. This is why it can never really be studied in a lab. You know, it can only ever be experienced personally, experientially. Even something silly like the taste of coffee not being able to be described to another person in such a way that they can experience it. Well, likewise, you can't just read about ayahuasca or hear about somebody else's experience or something and expect that you know personally what that experience is. And you can't drink it and expect to sit by idly and watch what medicine does while you remain normal, because it changes you, changes your pathways, your neurology, your chemistry, your biology, your physiology, and your spiritual bodies to the point where you open up to, you know, other dimensions of consciousness and being. So there's no neutrality in that space. It's very important for people to realize that you can't just go in and have a look. It doesn't do that.
Okay. Brilliant.
Yeah. Okay. As to whether drinking in Oklahoma or Iquitos, it's an interesting thing. You know, I did a great deal of my own personal training with my master in England in an abandoned hotel, and had some of the most profound life-altering and magical experiences of my entire life. It didn't make any difference with a super powerful shaman where you drink, because the shaman is able to open up dimensional portals wherever you are, can open up portals to anywhere if they're powerful enough. So, you know, this hotel in a 1950s seaside resort in Dorset became like Hogwarts, with, you know, multiple dimensions of dragons and gods and goddesses and what have you. It made no difference where we were. The only thing that I would say is that obviously without a shaman, a good shaman, it will probably make quite a big difference at your environment, because they're not able to open the environment out to other dimensions, other spaces, other whatever. So you might be pretty trapped in the environment that you're in with a poor shaman. And then the other side of it is, there's no doubt, however, that there are more spirits hanging out generally where there are more plants. So if you hang out in the jungle and drink medicine, yeah, you're going to come across all kinds of different plants, because the plants are part of this, the spirits are part of the plant world, at least within a certain level of shamanic mapping. You know, they're the plant spirits are one whole realm, and they're very powerful, of course, in the jungle, as are certain, you know, animal spirits and things like that. But I would say ultimately, bottom line, depends on the shaman, depends on the power of the shaman. If they're strong enough, it doesn't matter where you drink. You've got a strong medicine, a strong shaman, you can go anywhere in the universe.
Awesome. That'll be our next on the other side of the break. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back from the break, Paul's going to get to talk to you all out there, tell you about his center, Tantraya, and the things that are happening in Peru. It's a great time if you are traveling to head down and partake in Peru. But we'll be right back right after this commercial. Paul's going to come back with us. And then on the other side, we're going to talk about that shaman piece just for a minute. So we'll be right back right after this. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the show. Real quick, again, if you're liking what you're hearing and what's going on, please subscribe, like, share, and comment to us. We appreciate it. And I'm going to bring Paul in now and have you guys get to meet Paul. Paul, take it away.
Okay. Hi, everybody, again. So apparently I've been given the opportunity to speak a little bit about our work here at Tantraya in Peru. So we're based in Pisac, which is about half an hour outside of Cusco. And here I have my center. And we're teaching really the art of enlightenment, ultimately, or at least that's our aim. We're working within a multidisciplinary school or approach. We're bringing in the Western magical practices. You know, the West has its own tradition of enlightenment, in the same way that the Indian yogic system is there. Well, the West has its own system involved with Western magical practices, Hermeticism, coming from the Thoth and Egyptian lineages, harking back originally ultimately to Atlantean and Lemurian times even. But we're kind of following through with the Western kind of programs of evocation and invocation of angelic forces and other beings of such like. And then we're also including all of the world's shamanic traditions, I trained personally in a number of and initiated in a number of different traditions, from the Mongolian Buryat tradition to the Nepalese Jankri tradition to the Haitian Voodoo tradition, to the Ayahuasca tradition here in Peru. So we're including all of the kind of the shamanic stuff. And then we're combining it also with the Eastern mystical tradition. So we're heavily involved in Tibetan tantric practices. We're involved with the Taoist practices of China. And we're involved with the Jankri practices of Nepal, which kind of cross that shamanic boundary a little bit. And then we're trying to also bring in the Western scientific approach. So utilizing tools of consciousness expansion, trying to get tools for the measurement of brain states and brainwave patterns, and to try and replicate those patterns within certain restrictive environments, such as the flotation tank environment. And then to replicate certain brainwave patterns, such as the ayahuasca brainwave state, within that enclosed environment, so that we can learn how to work without medicines to achieve the same levels of consciousness. And we're learning how to explore the broad range and depth of human ability, human powers, the siddhis, as known in the yoga tradition, and really just trying to wake us up to our full, complete and total potential, which doesn't really seem to be limited, if we're being honest. We seem to be able to be everything. We seem to be able to be everywhere all at once. And we have these gifts and abilities kind of built in, hardwired into the system. And through the use of ritual technologies, be they medicine, or meditational, or trance-based, or however it may be, all of these things have the ability to wake us up to who and what we truly are, which will go unnamed for now. And we'd like to invite you all to come down and to join our programs and to evolve is the essential nature of the game. Thank you so much.
Yes. Yes, 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 and all yes to that. Guys, on a personal note, I can tell you from firsthand experience, Paul was talking earlier about, you know, I have met shamans in my life. I have not worked with but one for the ayahuasca process, but even not having that much experience, the experience that I had is unlike anything I have ever experienced. I still experience Paul in moments in meditation from the moments of the experiences that I had in ceremony. The space that he created in those ceremonies was, to me, almost beyond belief, because it was so safe and so nurturing, yet at the same time drawing from you the energies and things that were there to transform. So I just want to say from a personal level that this guy is for real. His work is for real. And I encourage you, if you can work it out, go there. It will be extraordinary. So my two cents for what it's worth.
Thank you.
No, my pleasure. So as we talk about, you were talking about the shaman, is there a way to, are there any things that you could suggest for someone who is going to interact? How do you feel your way into that relationship? Are there some things that, because not every person may respond to you, they may respond to someone else. So are there things that people can kind of, yeah, feel their way into in considering the relationship they were going about to enter with this, with their shaman?
Yeah, Roman, I think, well, you've used the right word, really, to some degree. You've got to feel into it. You know, we are all to a certain degree intuitive, and if we extend that enough, then we can get enough of a feeling about a teacher or a school to at least get some idea. And then, of course, again, you know, with the advent of you know, technology, internet, read up. I mean, do your research. You know, find out what other people are saying about different shamans, about the different schools. Don't take one person's word for it. Don't take 10 people's words for it. You know, really, really try and find out if enough people think a place is good and have had good experiences, well, that there's something to rely on. I wouldn't give out 100% guarantee because, unfortunately, you know, most people who enter into this world, you know, they're very naive and they don't really know what's going on underneath the surface. I mean, the shaman might be singing some nice songs, but you don't necessarily know what they're doing kind of underneath that. And that does take experience and discrimination and judgment and, you know, lots of other things that we kind of need to bring into play. We must understand, you know, that as Westerners, and maybe not even Westerners, I mean, nearly everybody really around the world now, we're like children and entering into an entirely new world. And it would be a grand mistake to bring our preconceptions and especially our naivety and our idealism and all of this kind of things to the world of the shaman, because I'm afraid it doesn't always apply. You know, shamans aren't supposed to be saints. They're not in the same category as gurus or yogis or meditators or anything like that. You know, there's no class or category that we can talk about with it that makes it seem like that there's some kind of, you know, formal education even or something. There's nothing really like that. So we really need to be very careful when we're entering into the world of the shaman. Much more so than, you know, if we were entering into the world of the yogi or the meditator or the Buddhist or something. It's not to say that there isn't, you know, and haven't been kind of, you know, abuses and negative energies in a lot of those circles as well. But I'm afraid to say it's a lot more rife within shamanism, within ayahuasca shamanism in particular. You know, there's at least there was before the pandemic, big money in it. There's a power trip in it for people. There's the kind of idealization of beautiful young Western women and men and, you know, whatever people are into. And, you know, there's seduction there on the side of the shaman as well as on the side of the person coming along. So it's not always a very safe arena to enter into. We need to be really mature and sensible when entering into it. You know, just have a sense of, you know, be careful, do your homework, sense it out, you know, all of that kind of thing. And, you know, where have they been trained? Who have they been trained with? And what do their teachers think about what they're doing? And, you know, all kinds of things that we can bring into play that gives us at least a little bit more of a clue as to what we're kind of getting ourselves involved with. Got to remember, it's not just about the medicine. The shaman is very important in this particular arena.
I was thinking as you were talking about the individualness of the experience. Like from when I the first person that I had never met who had done ayahuasca was sharing his notebooks with me. Because he wrote furiously afterwards to try to capture everything that happened during his ceremonies. And his was dominated with aliens, dominated with other world alien life form, all of that. And I remember thinking to myself, I don't go there. Like, I just don't go there. So that's weird to me, but okay, because I don't run around thinking about the world and aliens and those kind of things. My experience was you could not have drawn two completely contrasting experiences than mine and his. Mine was satisfying for me. His was satisfying deeply for him. And I think that's the whole point, is you're going into this incredibly sacred place. Would you trust that sacred place to anybody? You know, consider that so that when you are doing it, you have the resonance. You feel that resonance with this because there's something there that supports who you are, as opposed to randomness.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, obviously, even with the same shaman, everybody has their own individualized experiences. Mm-hmm. But there's a kind of an egregore or a field of energy that the shaman creates that gives impetus to the experience that you're having. It's an alchemical process where the shaman is sort of, you know, there at levels of your experience, you know, what's going on internally, and is able to make adjustments and, you know, move things around or bring other energies in or take other energies out at the level of your own being, at the level of your own experience of medicine. You know, that's what a good shaman can do. And then they have their own intention for the space, you know, generally, and that's at whatever level of consciousness the shaman is at, basically. You know, that's what you're going to get to. If the shaman's there at very, very high levels of consciousness, you're able to get to very, very high levels. And if the shaman isn't, you're not.
That's powerful. Very powerful perspective and understanding what you're, you know, what it is you're stepping into, this threshold that you're crossing into. So as we're kind of winding down about a little bit, I'd like to see if you have any thoughts of entering into a relationship with journeying, meaning what can people, how could someone who has no relationship to medicine, has heard about it, is interested, are there some real clear steps or ideas that we can share here that kind of get you into what it is to go to do the journey to engage with plant medicine?
I mean, of course, it depends what people's reasons are for wanting to engage with the medicine. It's not enough, I feel, just because it's there or just because it sounds interesting, or maybe even not enough just because we've heard that we can heal or learn from it. You know, maybe it needs to be something kind of deeper than this, perhaps. I mean, healing, of course, is probably the best of those categories, I would say, healing and learning anyway. But you know, it would depend on the person's, you know, desire. What are they trying to get to? You know, some people drink once and that's enough. Some people will drink 10,000 times and it will never be enough. And it kind of depends what people are looking for in that relationship, in the same as any relationship. You know, we don't just jump into, well, some people jump into bed, you know, at a split second, but for the most part, we give it some consideration, we think about it somewhat, and we build relationship, you know, over time. You know, with anything, you can't just build a relationship and then expect that to be kind of, you know, inbuilt the second you start. It takes time and energy and, you know, commitment and all the things that any normal relationship does. You know, the Aya, generally speaking, will give you pretty interesting experiences pretty much on the get-go. Some people don't necessarily experience anything straight away, but that's usually to do with calcification of the pineal gland and things like this. But most people will have visions straight away, and they'll be very extreme. And after a while, though, those visions will begin to desist and fade away. And the people will think that they've done something wrong or that the energy is turning against them in some way. But actually, all that's really happening is you're moving to a different, deeper level of your experience with the medicine. You know, it does not remain the same throughout the course of your ayahuasca drinking career. It changes like any relationship. It gets deeper, it gets stronger, it gets more profound. It might get less phenomenological, but that's okay as well. You know, we're not really looking for that side of it, hopefully, after a while anyway. We're looking for something deeper than just mind candy or visions or something like that. So you know, we start gently. We start by reading. We start by researching. We start by listening. We start by watching documentaries and things of this nature. And then, you know, perhaps if we've got a friend who's done it, we begin to talk more seriously and deeply with them about their experience, without judgment, without trying to put it into some kind of category that's already known to you, because this is a category that is not known to you. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, bit by bit, perhaps we make contact with a group or with a teacher or with a book. And bit by bit, we begin to decide, yeah, that's what we want to do. We want to drink. So, you know, we want to decide then, do we want to drink once or do we want to go and do a retreat, which is usually better in my view because it's more immersive, gives you more of a chance to integrate while you're there and talk to the shaman and perhaps learn other practices that can help you with it, etc. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, after your first retreat or your first medicine, at least you've got some understanding of what this is. But don't think that's all that there is, because there's so much more. You know, so many people do a retreat and write a book thinking they know what the ayahuasca is. But, you know, I've drunk maybe 5,000 times and I'm not writing any book anytime soon claiming to know what this is, because this is a great mystery. And perhaps it's good that it's a great mystery and that it stays within that category. I'm not saying I don't know certain things. Clearly I do. But there is still giant mystery there and needs to be acknowledged. And to say we know, we've done, we've experienced, the end, is always illusory. It's always egoic in some way. Either the ego's fear of its own dissolution, or the ego just wants to be in charge, you know, forever, without realizing there are higher forces out there.
Absolutely. Paul, this has been fantastic and has deeply satisfied my questions. I really appreciate you being here, and I appreciate you very much in general. I'm so grateful for you, and I'm looking forward to when I can come down and see you again. So that is on my mind, and of course, as the world turns, we'll see how that process evolves. But everybody, www.tantraya.com, please check out Paul. Check out his work. He has courses available online, as well as being able to go to his center in Peru and experience him firsthand. So please avail yourself of that. Thank you, Paul, for being here. Thank you to everybody out there for the show. I hope you found it informative and appreciate the opportunity to get to share these conversations with you. www.adventuresintruth.com. Come over and check out my book. Check out what's going on. If you want to work with me as well, you can check that out too. So thanks very much for being here, and have a great rest of your day, everybody. Oops. Thank you.
Thank you so
there
much.
You go, pushing my buttons.
Ciao.
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 We hope you enjoyed this episode of Adventures in Truth Podcast. Thank you for joining us. We'd love to connect with you. Please like us on Facebook and subscribe on YouTube. To learn more about Jim's book, Fear is a Choice, Unraveling the Illusion of Our Separation from Love, or to book a session with Jim, you can email us at adventuresintruth@gmail.com, or you can join us on the web at www.adventuresintruth.com. Tune in next time for another great Adventures in Truth podcast.